Welcome everybody to Worst Take, and today we have a San Diego Padres edition. I'm here with Chase Hapner and Isaac Salazar. Do you guys want to introduce yourself real quick?
Go ahead, Isaac.
Go ahead, Chase. I'll go first. My name's Isaac Salazar. I've been a Padres fan since I was like 3 years old. I've been a Padres fan my whole life. I was born in the Tri-City area, Oceanside, California, and
My name's Chase Hapner. Been a Padres fan practically my entire life. Dad was a Padres fan, grew up in San Diego, came down to the Valley where I currently live at. So let's get this rolling.
Yeah, so obviously the season starts on Friday. I recently wrote an article about kind of just the projections and expectations heading into this season, but I think we should start off with just how the team stands now. Isaac, you brought up that that the team's projected to go 27-33. I wrote my projections out. I said 30-30. I think they're kind of a middle ground team. But with that said, it's really interesting to see how the 60-game season is going to affect them, especially when you bring up last year. They started out – the team started out super hot. April was great last season, and so I don't know. What do you guys kind of think this year's going to be like? Just because it's really strange.
For me, I think the pitching staff is going to show out more than anything. They're going to get less reps. We have some guys coming off Tommy John surgery. Actually, all three of our confirmed starting pitchers have coming off Tommy John within the last 3 years. So I think the 60-game season for them is going to work great. They're going to show off their stuff, and the less times the team see them now, it's honestly the better. And our bullpen is extraordinarily – I think our pitching is going to shine and push us to over the 30 mark, but the offense is what's going to have to really come alive, which I don't know how well that's going to work in a 60-game season.
So with that 60-game season – normally in a 162-game season, you wouldn't think youth would favor the team because the veterans are going to be the guys that are, you know, they're used to that 162-game season. They're used to that grind. But 60-game season, I feel like youth favors us a lot this year. I mean, I agree. I think we're a 30-30 team with upside to go more than 30-30. I don't think we can – I think we can compete with the Dodgers. I'm not saying we'll beat the Dodgers for the division. I think we can compete for the wild card spot. We have the talent. We have everything we need. I mean, it's just going to depend on how the season goes and how well managed we are with new manager Jace Tingler. There's a lot of potential with this team. I could easily see 36 wins.
Yeah, I like that you brought up the pitching, Chase. The bullpen, I think this year is a lot's going to depend on the bullpen because – the bullpen's going to be able to pitch a lot more because there's so many less innings that are going to go around. So having Kirby Yates, Pagan, and Pomeraz as your 7-9 is absolutely nasty. That's probably the best 7-9 combo in the league, I would think. Kirby last year was the best closer in the league. I mean, he had an 0-5 record, but he was completely lights out unless he was playing the Dodgers. I don't know why that was the case, but – for some reason, he struggled against the Dodgers a lot. But I think that's where this team's kind of built. And it's kind of odd just for baseball, but you look at, like, the Padres teams that have been successful, and they're basically scrappy teams with good bullpen pitching. And that's what this team has. So I like that it's built through the bullpen and then built through basically, the way I see it, three star hitters – in Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis, and Tommy Pham. And then you have a lot of question marks besides that in the lineup. But those three guys and that bullpen are going to carry this team. And I think that's something that could happen, especially in a 60-game season when the bullpen can have a bigger effect.
I like how Isaac brought up the youth because we do have a lot of question marks on the backside of the rotation, the outfield in general. We maybe have one solid starter, and that's Pham for sure. Center field and right field are still up in the air. And where Mackenzie Gore and Luis Patino stand for this season is in the air too. I don't know if they're going to implement a – they said they're going to do a five-man rotation, but Tingler said in one of his interviews that he could up to have up to 12 starters. That's the part that I was questioning.
I think I want a six-man rotation. I want to see Goran Pitino. I want to see them, you know, I want to see them pitch. I want to see what they got. I know they're young, but, I mean, I think in a 60-game season, I feel like we have nothing to lose, you know. I feel like we should put them in there, give them maybe four or five innings, nothing overboard, and let the bullpen take over for the rest of their games. I mean, they have a lot of upside. They have so much potential in them. And like I said, we have nothing to lose, so I don't see why we can't throw them in there. And our rotation, our bullpen, everything's there to back them up.
Yeah, you brought up the rotation, and then you bring up Goran Pitino. It'll be interesting to see how that all plays out, just because I think if – say they're not in the roster opening day, if the Padres start out really hot, then they're definitely going to get moved up, like no questions, like pretty quickly probably. I wonder if they're gonna how they're gonna kind of like play the yeah, how they get the extra year of control. I don't really know how that's working out this season. I don't know if either of you guys know, but I wonder if they're gonna kind of leverage that. I don't really know how that's gonna be, because like you can bring up people up after like a month typically, but it'll be interesting to see if they maybe they start they kind of do what they did with Tatis Jr. and have Gore start in the rotation, you know, like third game of the year, fourth game of the year. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But with the rotation now, Paddock, opening day starter, I think that was kind of obvious. It'll be interesting to see how Lamet plays out, just because he's kind of been up and down throughout his career. Obviously, he had Tommy John, and then you have Garrett Richards also coming back from Tommy John. And then Davies, Luke Chasey, those guys, you kind of know what you're getting, I feel like. Definitely. And then Kyle Quantrill is kind of a wild card, in my opinion. But he was hot for middle of last year. He did real well, so.
Yeah. I see, the only thing with me, I'm not the biggest Luke Chasey fan. He has, I believe it's three pitches to his arsenal, which is the fastball, the curve, and something else. I forgot.
I think it's just a cutter. There's a cutter with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So seeing him pitch, it's like he has those games where he pitches great, but then, you know, it's like the next game he gets rocked and he gets six runs put up on him. And it's like I feel he's more of a bullpen arm. I can't see him as nothing more than a number five. I see Davies ahead of him, and I could even see Goran Pitino starting games four and five over them, which is what I would like. We've given Luke Casey the chances, you know, and I feel like might as well throw in the other guys if they could be better.
Yeah, I feel like the only thing that's kind of letting him hang in with this team is that he's a lefty, and there's not really other lefty starters besides Gore. But if Gore comes in, he could easily just take a spot in the rotation right away.
I was going to say, the lefty options for starters, which were between Strom and Lucchesi, but Strom showed that he's better out in the bullpen with those either two, maybe three innings of work. That's where I think Lucchesi should stand. And then if they don't implement a six-man rotation, Davies or Quantrill should be the four or five. They can go either or, just both have around similar upside.
Okay.
But yeah. What I wanted them to do with the six-man rotation is that every sixth start, they switch out Gore and Pitino. So Gore will start 1 week, and then the next week, Pitino will start, and Gore goes into the bullpen, and then vice versa every other week, so that if we do make postseason, both of them have starting experience and then bullpen experience coming out either late game, mid game, which would really help us and have them understand what it means to come out of the bullpen rather than just being straight start.
Of course. That's a really good point.
Yeah, and then you bring up like how the postseason you have guys. I mean, we've seen Kershaw come in and blow a number of games, which I love to see. But, you know, having that bullpen experience, I think that does mean something. And I like that you brought that up, Chase, just like how, Isaac, you brought up the youth, which I do agree with. I think the youth, and especially the youth with these young arms too, the shorter season is going to benefit them so much. Where
for sure.
You have older guys, and the reason why having a veteran guy that maybe he's not as talented as this younger guy, but having him for a full season sometimes is just better for the ball club, is because come dog days of the summer, the young guys are lost and they're getting roughed up. I mean, we saw that last year with Cal Quantrill, where he just hit a day and it was just like, oh, it is over. And he just had like a few abysmal starts after, I believe he had a sub ERA, sub three ERA most of the season. So
he had like two or three rough starts in a row. And then after that, when he went to the bullpen, he was lights out from the bullpen.
He's awesome. Mm-hmm. And you brought up those dog days of summer. I feel like, you know, with Quantrill, we can throw Paddock in there. You know, last year, Paddock started off very hot. But when he came, I think June, to face the Dodgers and the Phillies and the Mets, you know, three solid teams, three decent teams with good hitters, he struggled, you know. He struggled. He didn't have his best stuff. He wasn't showing out against the teams that, you know, were playoff contenders. But that was his first year, you know. So he's getting used to things, and I feel like this year he could easily be the ace and do a lot better than that.
Yeah, I'm excited to see him on Friday.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Definitely.
The one thing that I want to see out of Paddock the most is if he truly developed that curveball, because that will bring him from 2-3 starter to being the ace of the team. If his curveball is as improved as reported.
Yeah, because his fastball, the whole thing that I've always heard about Paddock is that he has, I mean, the changeup's there, obviously. That's his go-to pitch. But the fastball's really straight, and he's basically has only those two pitches. And if the curveball comes into play, it'll change how effective he can use his fastball. That's the thing that I've heard a lot about. I don't know what your guys' kind of thoughts are on that. Obviously, you know more about actually playing baseball than I do, but as far as like having that third pitch, does that really like change the mindset of how you can use that fastball?
Yes, because then you can start pitching backwards. Because if you can get the curveball across on 0-0 counts, they can't just sit fastball or just think, okay, that pitch seems a little bit slower than the fastball. It's got to be the changeup, so let me just sit on it. It brings in that other dimensional pitch that breaks across two planes, both horizontally and vertically, along with the changeup breaking the other way. It gives him more of an advantage against righties now than he did against lefties with the fading away changeup.
Okay. Yeah. So, in my opinion, having that extra pitch or two, I mean, you never want the hitter to know what to expect. I mean, with the Astros, they knew what they expected and they won a World Series. So, you know, having those extra pitches, it just helps, you know. You can change it up. You can play to your strengths and to the weaknesses of the batter. Me, like, I sucked with curveballs. Just throw me a curveball and I'll probably get out. But, you know, that's going to be playing to the weaknesses of the other team is what's going to help. And only having a fastball that's straight with no movement with, you know, he threw 93, 94 consistently last year, which is good. And then, you know, just having a secondary pitch that doesn't have much movement, I mean, you're going to get rocked.
Like Kershaw,
kind of saw all that.
Remember Kershaw and his
go ahead, Chase.
He had the fastball and the curveball. And then when hitters started to get used to that is when he started to develop the slider and then up this game even more. And that's when he had some of the best pitching years, was when he had that third pitch in the slider. When was it? He pitched with the sub 2 ERA for the full year. Wasn't it like 171 and he got the MVP? I think that really helps pitchers elevate their game if it is a solid offering.
Definitely. It's all, the more you have in your arsenal, the better.
Yeah. I do have to say, I like that Paddock's go-to pitch isn't something that just destroys your elbow, which is nice. So he can rely on that changeup and not just lose his elbow. Because we see all these guys like LeMet, he throws the slider a whole bunch, and then he's already had Tommy John once. So I do like that you kind of have that with a young guy that he's maybe not going to ruin his career. Kind of shifting over to just the fielding side and the batters, are Francisco Mejia and Austin Hedges. So I was writing about this in an article, and I really want to see Mejia take the job just because Austin Hedges is awesome. but he cannot hit, and he provides almost nothing from the box. Honestly, so what do you guys want to see from the catching position this year?
I think Luis Torrens is a dark horse candidate to take it because I think he's the best of both worlds. Mejia is a little bit more offensive-minded than Hedges, though he has gotten the experience of working with Hedges with the major league staff. That's what gives him the one up over Torrens. But I think Torrens is the best of both worlds. He's a defensive catcher that can hit for average, where Mejia is more offensive-minded.
So with Hedges and Mejia, obviously Hedges can't hit. I think I'm sure his career batting average is easily under 200. He's not a good hitter. He provides you no upside. I mean, he's a great, don't get me wrong, he's a great defensive catcher. I think he could easily be one of the best defensive catchers in the league. But, you know, in that lineup, it's basically like having a pitcher in there. Last year, it was like having two pitchers in that lineup because he could not hit. And the thing with Mejia is he doesn't have the defense that Hedges has, but he has a bat. He has a good stick. I want to see Mejia up his game on defense. But as far as hitting, I think he's fine. I want to see Mejia back there way more than I want to see Hedges. And, you know, Tingler already told Hedges, if you can't hit, you're not going to play. So I feel like getting that across to Hedges is a really good thing. But I like Capusano and I like Torrens too. So I like that point you brought up, Chase.
Yeah, one thing on Mejia is that last year, post All-Star break, Mejia hit 305 and had an 866 OPS, which, I mean, you didn't really have much of Fernando Tatis, and Machado wasn't that great last year in the second half. So he was probably the best hitter on the team in the second half of the year, which is kind of crazy because he, during the first half, he hit 211 with a 599 OPS, which is Austin Hedges level. But it'll be interesting to see because, I mean, I really hope that Mejia at least shows something from behind the plate. And you brought up Torrens and Campusano. Both those guys are good prospects too. I think Luis Campusano is, what, the third highest ranked prospect – or fourth highest ranked prospect behind – Abrams and then Goran Pitino, I believe.
As of right now, it's going to change because of the draft.
Okay.
Because we did get Wilcox and Robert, which are top of the line prospects.
Yep.
Just think about second base. That's kind of the only hole in our infield right now. Second base is a wide open. Who else is there right now? We just got rid of Brian Dozier.
So we got Profar. We still got Greg Garcia.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got Garcia. I mean, that can easily be. I think second base. What you got to do with this team on second base is you got to go with the hot hand. I feel like you can't solidify that position. Whoever has the hot hand with the stick, I feel like they all have defensive upside. They're very good at defense, you know. I mean, it's just going to depend on who's hitting the best. On a 60-game season, you need to hit, you know. It's easy to slump in baseball, but whoever has a hot hand needs to be in there, in my opinion.
Do you think the same thing about center field with Grisham and Edwards?
I think they want Grisham to take it. I think they definitely want Grisham to take the spot.
I think Grisham's the guy.
So I want to see Grisham take it, but I don't know how well he hits against lefties. I think that's the big question mark that Oliveras has the upper hand on, is the lefty part.
Well, and then you can always have Grisham play against righties, which is the majority of games you play. And definitely, then Oliveras kind of spell him in center field and maybe get some starts in left and right, you know, and spot start for whoever's playing out there. You got Myers and Pham, but I feel like Pham's pretty much an everyday player at this point. But Myers and Naylor are kind of battling out in right. So kind of have Oliveras play over there. And then, of course, there's Abraham Almonte, who used to be on the Padres a long time ago, but do you guys think he's even going to make the team?
I don't think he hit really well in spring, but he hasn't shown that he can hit it in the majors. He's hit everywhere else. Like when you look at his Venezuelan Winter League or in the DSL, he shows that he hits like in the upper 300s to 400s. But then when it comes time to translating it to the MLB, it's where he only hits low 200s and does not have the power numbers that he would need.
So I don't think he'll make the team. I like our outfield. What's up?
Can we get rid of Lugares?
Who?
I think Lugares. So.
I don't know. But I mean, I think our outfield's solid. I really like Pham. I read an article the other day. Pham was like the third ranked left fielder, either in the NL or in the whole league. Yeah, Pham's a solid player. He's an everyday player. I feel like Grisham, he can be the same, maybe not against lefties, but Grisham's solid. And then it all depends on who's the hottest. It all depends on who's the hottest. If Myers, oh my God, if Myers can be somewhat consistent, he could be an everyday player in the outfield. All he has to do is hit like 235, 250 and provide home run upside. And he can be an everyday player. And I really like Naylor. I was a big fan of Naylor last season. I mean, he comes up big in big situations. What's up?
Have you seen Naylor, what he's looked like now compared to what he
looked like? Oh, he slimmed way down, huh?
Slimmed way down. He looks like he's ready for that outfield job. The only thing that I saw was in, I think, the last scrim game. I don't know if it was versus the Angel or if it was an inner squad. Is that his arm is a little funky in left field. He doesn't have the accuracy of what most outfielders do have when they're ready to play major league.
That's a little odd.
Well, because he played first base.
He's doing a good
the outfield.
Yeah, he's doing a good
longer of a throw. Because I think it was during the inner squad, he allowed a run.
Definitely. He had a good arm in the right field. Okay. I mean, the thing I like most about Naylor, for how big he was last year, he was pretty fast.
He was pretty quick.
He was fast, and he has a good bat. I mean, there were times, bottom of the eighth, bottom of the ninth, he'd come up and he would provide a big time hit. You know, he's good in those situations, and I feel like every Padre game could be a close one where it could come down to those last innings, and I feel like having those kind of guys in the lineup helps. Well, yeah, you bring a good point, Chase. His arm's not that good, but he's a solid player. I think outside of second base, right field could be our biggest problem, though.
For sure.
Yeah. I thought it was a little bit odd just that they've moved out so many players out of the outfield. You know, you move out Manny Margot, and Margot had definitely had a lot of opportunity, but – he's still a super young player because he got called up at 21, I want to say. And that was last year was his third season, second full season in the league. Yeah. So he's still a super young player. They move on from him. They move on from Hunter Renfroe. Moving on from Hunter Renfroe kind of frustrated me just because even though he strikes out so much, he's the consistent clutch hitter and he has a ton of pop in his bat. And he's a good fielder. That was the other thing. Like, he should have won a gold glove last year.
So he should have
had. Then you,
both of them were, like,
yeah.
Only war for defensive-wise. I was like, and none of them won golden gloves. I guess that's just the Padres effect.
It is.
Yeah, sadly. But I don't know. I just thought that their outfield had, like, so many options, and now it seems like there's not that many in-house options, at least, where – at least they did secure that left field position because they were all the left, right, and center were all kind of question marks, but just like a ton of guys. Like we'll figure it out with like these like seven guys. And then now you have Cordero gone, Margot gone, Renfroe gone, and who else? Deadline.
Reyes.
Yeah. So you have those guys all departing, and then basically – the only guy that was on the team before, like heading into when 2019 started, was Will Myers, who was probably the worst of the bunch. So,
yeah.
And so that one just kind of, hurts. Obviously, Naylor was in the Padres organization, but he got called up partway through the season. I'm excited for Naylor as well. Grisham, he seems to be A.J. Preller's guy just because Grisham and Jerickson Profar seem to be like A.J. Preller's guys. Like he just wants – he believes in them.
For a long time.
Yeah. But – I don't know. I wonder how the outfield's going to play. It'll be interesting to see if just how they utilize their guys, because Will Myers, I think right before we were recording, we were talking about that, to be honest, he should probably just start at first base, but that's not going to happen because Hosmer makes so much money, which is really just a sad reality. The Hosmer situation, I remember I texted you, Chase, right when it happened. I said, like, okay, like, what do you think about this deal? And you were like, I don't really like it. And I talked myself into it. I'm like, hey, it's smart. You know, you move Myers to the outfield. I was completely wrong. And Eric Hosmer, it drives me insane because you have Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis, and they won't win a gold glove if Eric Hosmer is the first baseman.
For sure.
Because he can't make a pick. It's so frustrating. Like, he tries to Olay every single ball in the dirt. And then, I mean, Tatis had a ton of errors last year. Like, but if you have, like, a first baseman that can – he should just be able to make all those picks. Definitely. And you cut off, like, half of Fernando Tatis' throwing errors. So
his throwing errors were probably picks that were missed by him.
Yeah.
And it's funny, though, because I think Machado had one of his, like – the most errors that he's had in a season last year, I want to say. And Tatis, I mean, he had a ton of errors, but he's known as being a great fielder. Like, and it, you watch him and you're like, oh yeah, this guy's a great fielder. But then you have Eric Hosmer, who of course is the guy that has four gold gloves, but yet he's the problem. So it's such a weird situation there. That's the one thing that really scares me about this team is that Eric Hosmer is going to be the future for a long time.
And watching Padre games and seeing a ball get by Eric Hosmer that could have been picked, or seeing a pop fly against the Astros that was so catchable, it would have ended the game, and he lets it fall in front of him. We pay you, we give you, I think that contract was $144 million, I want to say, for 6 years. That can't be happening, you know? It's frustrating to see Hosmer not be able to pick a ball or, you know, those kind of plays happening because we paid him so much and we have so much talent. You know what, though? Last year, his bat wasn't too bad. He had a couple home runs. He is a frustrating player, but when he's hot, he's hot.
My only problem
– and he does strike out a lot.
Is that he refuses to join the launch angle revolution. He hits so many balls on the ground, and he's not nearly fast enough for that to be doing it. He needs to be hitting it over the infield. And one of the metrics was his average launch angle was like 10 degrees. That's just straight ground balls at every single time.
That's dreadful.
Rollover. Also, and you even look at his home runs and they're line drive home runs. He's not giving the ball lift. Also, exactly. The amount of double plays that Eric Hosmer grounds into also hurts. But it's because of the launch angle.
That I think that was my biggest problem with Manuel Margot, is that he didn't provide those home runs. I feel like nowadays, if you look at the World Series teams, okay, maybe except for the Nationals, but the Nationals had guys that can mash. But the Nationals just had good pitching. But the years before, the Dodgers and the Astros, the Dodgers and the Indians, Dodgers, Red Sox, those were the World Series before, and each of those teams had guys that could mash. If you notice the trend in the World Series, those were very high-scoring games, especially the Dodgers and Astros series that the Astros won in 7 games. I mean, of course, the Astros knew what was coming, but, I mean, those were games that were just – they were like shootouts, I guess you could say. But
even the Cubs and were – just
yeah, Cubs. Yeah,
I remember watching Rajon Davis just tying the game, keeping it going into extras. It's just like one home run each inning after that, just kept going.
Yeah. And I think that was my biggest problem about letting go of Reyes and Renfro. I'm not a big Renfro fan at all. I like Reyes, but that was my biggest problem with them giving him up, is that those two guys hit a lot of home runs. I mean, I feel like Renfro's home run total kind of died down in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
But those guys could mash. Those guys could mash. So.
Yeah, and especially because.
Go ahead. What
were you saying, Chase?
I was going to say, I liked Reyes a little bit more because he had that little bit of more average. And since we all knew that it was inevitable that the DH was going to be placed into the National League sooner or later, I feel like we could have gone 1 or 2 years with Reyes in right field, at least getting that power support that we need.
Yeah, I mean, so last season, Machado was leading the team with 32, or Renfro was with 33, then you have 32, and then you had Reyes, he had 27, and then Hosmer and Tatis are both at 22. So there's not a ton of pop, and you get rid of two of the guys that have most of the pop. So it's just, you're going to have guys like Myers pick that up, and then hopefully Tommy Pham kind of provides what Eric Hosmer has in the home run department. But the difference with Tommy Pham and him is that Pham does a lot more. Pham gets on base a lot. And that's where kind of Pham's skill set is. But I wonder if, you know, you have a guy like maybe Mejia emerges, and he's never been a big power hitter, but if he's raking, then he's going to get 20, 30. You know, he might have a couple 30 home run seasons if he's playing the whole season. Obviously this is 162 game season, not a 60 game season with 30 home runs. That would be something spectacular. But one of these guys has to emerge if the Padres are going to be a real threat this year. The pitching, I think the pitching's there. I think it might be young, but the bullpen, that 7, 8, 9, that is so nasty.
What do you think is going to fill out the middle part, though? That's my question. It's because we lost Munoz, we lost Castillo again, we lost Winginter. So that leaves Michelle Baez, Strom, and then possibly Gore and Patino. Oh, wait, then we
you got, also have
– Then we got Tim Hill. I forgot about Tim Hill.
You also have Craig Stammen, who's he's okay. But if he's your six-inning guy, I mean, I can live with that. Now, when he's the eighth-inning guy, that's a whole different story. You do not want to see that.
Well, back-to-back-to-back-to-back is all I remember.
Home run, yeah, it's the National. Well, with that bullpen, you know, again, with those names, you know, again, it all comes down to playing to the strengths and weaknesses of the other team. That's the game of baseball. You know, you got to play to that. If, you know, if you see a lefty coming in to hit, throw in Strom in there. And, you know, that's basically what the name of the game is. You got to play to the strengths and weaknesses of the other team.
Is the rule being implemented that if a relief pitcher is being brought in, he has to face three batters now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's part of that is you can't bring in like Tim Hill to go against the lefties because he was supposed to be the lefty specialist.
Okay. You're right. I forgot about that.
I wasn't sure if they were going to keep it this season because of 2020, but I think they're still.
Yeah, that's the. Yeah. That's the 3-out rule, I think, now.
Yeah. I don't think it's 3 outs.
But,
I think
it's the three batters? Okay. Yeah.
Gotcha.
That sucks. I hate that rule. It's like, why are you changing baseball?
What do you guys – okay, I think we're almost about time to kind of wrap up our initial thoughts on the Padres, but two things I want to go through before we head out here. One, what do you guys think of the DH? Like, what do you guys like the DH in the National League or do you not? I personally like it.
I don't like it because I like seeing the pitchers hit, because for the pitchers that can't hit, like the Mad Bums, the Grankies, the Mike Lorenzens, it's fun watching them hit. And two, it makes it makes teams strategize a little bit more. It just doesn't give them an extra hitter. It makes them, hey, I know my starter's gone six innings, he's at 80 pitches. There's a guy on second and one out. Do I risk taking this guy out that's in a groove to try to get that run in, or and then try to rely on the bullpen for the next three or four innings? It takes that aspect away. That's the part I didn't like about it.
Okay.
Isaac, are you a fan or are you not a fan?
I like it. I mean, my thing was, you know, if there's going to be a DH in the AL, I feel like there should be a DH in the NL too. It didn't really make a difference though, because when an NL team goes to an AL park, you can have a DH. And then if the AL team comes to the NL park, you have the pitcher hitting. I mean, I like it. I think it'll bring more firepower. I think it'll be more offense. I hate seeing pitchers hit only because the Padres don't really have that pitcher that can rake. I like it, honestly. I really do.
I will be so happy to not watch Lamet hit, because he has probably one of the worst swings I've ever seen. It's really bad.
Even Lucchesi has a bad swing.
Oh, his is bad too.
Yeah.
Cal Quantrill's all right, huh? Because he hit in college, right?
Yeah.
Even Paddock, and then
even Paddock has a decent swing.
Yeah. And then the other rule that I wanted to bring up was, what about the extra inning for runner on second? I don't really have an opinion on it. I think it just makes the game go quicker, for better or for worse. It's cool. I think it's cool that they're trying it out.
I think this is the season to try it out, but at the same time, my question is for that reliever, since there's already a runner on second, how well does this affect ERA? Because does that count as technically his run, even though he inherited the runner? Where does that run go? Who takes the loss at that point? It messes with the win-loss stats of the pitcher. That's just where I'm confused at, of how well this is going to work.
Yeah. So they were discussing that, I think today or yesterday, but that's all going to come down. I mean, I think we'll have more updates on that as the season goes, or not as the season goes, but before the season, obviously. I'll have more updates on that. Personally, I don't think it should affect the pitcher. I can see why people would make an argument for it affecting the pitcher, but I don't see a reason why it should, the stats at least.
Yeah.
As far as that rule though, I don't think you should go into the 10th inning with the runner on second. I think you should wait 3 innings or 4. I know maybe that's not a reality, but I'd rather have that. But, you know, then again, it's fair for both teams. Both teams have an equal chance, and it will make the game go by faster.
See, I like the rule, because I watched it with college baseball while the MLB was on protest. And it seemed to make it a little bit more interesting, because you get 3 out, you try to get that guy over, then you might see bunting coming back to actually baseball and make a little bit more small ball in the extra innings. But I think it's going to make the game a little bit more interesting in the 10th inning, and it's going to be a little quicker if you have that. Then here's the other thing that affects is, if you're in a tied game, do you bring your closer in the 9th or the 10th?
That's a good point. I'd bring him in the 9th.
Then who do you put in?
Because I think that's also one of those things that I mean, for this season at least, will be beneficial to the Padres, because they have that good strong bullpen, where if they're in a tie game and they put Pomeranz in the 7th, they go and he pitches, you know, quick 1-2-3 inning, put him back in the 8th, and game's still tied at 9th. You can have Kirby coming in the 9th and then also pitch the 10th, and then you still got Pagan after that. So that's one of those things where it's like, that could, you can play that to your advantage. And I mean, obviously baseball, Moneyball started in baseball, and you have these other sports that have really like adopted this analytical element that baseball brought in. Well, this is gonna be one of those things where that's gonna be really analytical of how you approach these situations, which I think is cool. I love that part of the game. I think baseball is very unique in that way of like, oh, look at this guy's numbers, and you can't completely judge a guy off his numbers, but I mean, you see a guy that's hitting 220 and a guy that's hitting 300, you can figure out, you know, which guy's a better hitter. Like, it's pretty cut and dry, at least. Where other sports, you know, it's like, oh, look, but this quarterback threw this, but it's like, yeah, but other quarterback has no receivers to throw to. So like there's a lot of other elements where you can look at numbers in baseball and go, okay, what works the best? Can we ever, should we have a relief pitcher pitch two innings? Does that work better now with this rule? That'll be cool to see. I think that I'm pretty open-minded to this rule, and you guys seem like you're the same way. I wonder, like, it might be way more exciting to watch the end of baseball games, which the league needs to do something. I mean, obviously we're going to watch all the games, but common fans don't watch a ton of baseball games. And if this can get a lot more people to tune in, then they'll probably adopt it.
I think
it would be more,
that's what made
more intense for sure.
Yeah. I think because a lot of people go see college games, and even when it goes into that extra innings, you see most MLB fans when the ninth inning, two outs, bottom of the ninth, and it's a tied game, you start seeing fans leave because you don't know when it's going to end. At least with that runner on second, you know there's a chance of it ending that inning. So get
people. And also, say you sit through a game and it's been 2-2 since the second inning, there's going to be some excitement of like, hey, something's going to happen now, you know? where a lot of games, it's like, oh, this is just going to be 0-0 for the rest of the game. You know, this game's going to last forever. But I'm excited for it. I feel like this is kind of a good spot to wrap up. Do you guys have anything else you want to say real quick?
I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on the Franchy Cordero trade. What did you guys think about trading him away?
I thought that it was not a good trade from a value perspective, especially when you bring up that they get a submarine left-handed specialist and you're trading away a guy that, yes, he's had some injury problems, but he has all the talent in the world. And there's also a rule change where you can't really use submarine left-handed specialists to their full extent anymore, where he's going to have to play against righties. And it seems like they're kind of like chasing something that the rules have already changed, which I didn't really understand that element of it.
I just wanted to see if anyone could ever live up to the potential of this talent. That's the part that I was kind of afraid of.
Yeah.
Speed, crazy power. Puts it together. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was I didn't mind the trade. Like Matt said, you know, it's not really going to play to our advantage with the lefty submarine pitcher. But, I mean, Frenchie had a lot of potential. This is one of those trades where you just got to see how everything plays out, you know, how Frenchie does throughout his career and how much Tim Hill helps us. That's just one of those kinds of trades. I feel like it's too early to determine, you know, whether how beneficial it is to us. Personally, I didn't mind it.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I think that's a good point to wrap it up, but it was great talking to you, and we'll have some more episodes out soon. But this was just our initial thoughts on the Padres heading into this 2020 coronavirus season.
Yeah.
All right, cool, guys.
All right, man.
Yeah. So I was thinking about it right now. We can use a different thing than Zoom, just because Zoom kind of cuts out a little bit.
Yeah.
But this is also our first episode, so it's kind of just like we're just talking.
Yeah.
But there's a thing